Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Bill Barnwell.
12 o'clock. Rick, I think you might be the president of the Bill Barnwell fan club.
One of my favorites. You know that.
I know. You love him.
Combing through his stuff right now.
I'm sure he is. He's also on the podcast with Mina Kimes today. So he's having a very, very busy day. And then at 2 o'clock on Bart and Hahn, Paul Feinbaum will join the show.
That's disgusting. No. Disgust me.
Why?
That disgusts me. Because
you should be on our show.
Yeah, but you know who's right. That's supposed to be your buddy. I mean, your buddy's who books guests for that show. He knows that Feinbaum's your guy. And he just go right behind your back and goes and gets Feinbaum.
So you're angry with their producer then?
Well, shouldn't you be? I mean, that's your buddy.
He says he's done nothing wrong. He texted me in defense of himself earlier today. He says, I've done nothing wrong. I'm booking my show the best way possible.
Well, doesn't that feel like he knows he did something wrong? Otherwise, why would he text you?
Well, his point was when he used to produce Stephen A's show, he used to have Feinbaum on all the time. They have a terrific relationship, and he just has carried that over to his new show.
Yeah, but they already stole Rex Ryan. Rex Ryan was our guy. They stole him, right?
But you can understand them having Rex, though. Bart played for Rex.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And I understand Stephen A having Paul Feinbaum. He's Stephen A. He can have whoever he wants. This is now, all of a sudden, because Stephen A no longer is doing the radio, we kind of... It was passed on to us, and then Paul Feinbaum became one of our favorite guests, and we have a great relationship.
A weekly on Friday in football season, yes.
Exactly right, and now he's stolen.
It doesn't feel great.
I'm offended.
It doesn't feel great.
If it wasn't for the Dinos' big comeback win this morning, I would be done with this radio show right now.
And your trivia dominance as well.
That was good. Yeah, I've been on a heater a little bit.
Ricky,
yeah,
you can't be done with our radio show. I mean, you already filled your weekly quota of missing a segment. That already happened.
I didn't miss the entire segment.
You didn't miss the entire segment, but you set out for a good 10, 15 minutes.
That's like a shift change.
Okay.
that's what we're doing?
Okay.
That was quite the shift change.
I got benched, coach, like, and I didn't even
know
why.
You sure you don't want to go back in? Lace it up right now, coach. I'll be back.
No, we call that guy, you know what? When you check out at the grocery store and you're separating, you know, your groceries from the other person's groceries?
Yeah, yeah. With that little bar thing, yeah.
Yeah, he separates the forwards from the defensemen.
I hate when people get so aggressive with that thing. It's like, okay, I understand. I have 65 items. At some point, you'll put the bar up. Does it need to go up before they're even checking my stuff out?
People get very nervous. You're going to start putting stuff
into
their pile.
That. God forbid their tuna fish get mixed in with my with my groceries, right? They like reach across you to grab that thing and lay it down.
There are some people that are extra aggressive with the bar at the checkout line.
Right?
Yes, I'm with you. 100%.
Very territorial. Very territorial.
I've had people like, it wasn't even my turn. The guy in front of me was still being checked out. And the guy behind me reaches across, grabs the bar, throws it down. Like a statement is being made.
He's throwing down the gauntlet on you, Dave.
I don't want my Tangelo to get anywhere near your bananas. Stop it.
Yeah, that could be awkward. Tangelo's rubbing up against bananas. That could be
weird. What is a Tangelo exactly, by the way?
It's a
tangerine
delicious.
And a what? A tangerine.
It's a tangerine and an orange, isn't it? Isn't it a Tangelo?
What's the Jello then?
One of the Ball brothers? I don't know.
That was the best one this week, man.
That was a good line. That was a good line. All right. All this food talk, 98.7 ESPN, and Stu Leonards wants to thank all the brave and hardworking heroes during this pandemic. Stu Leonards has created a first responders gift box with healthcare workers and first responders in mind. If you know a hero who deserves Stu's favorite treats, send us their story at 98.7 FM at ESPN.com or tweet with the hashtag 987Salute. We'll choose 10 winners on Friday, salute each recipient on air, send them a Stu's gift box. Again, email 98.7FM at ESPN.com or tweet with the hashtag 987Salute. If you'd like to purchase a gift box to send, head to stewsgifts.com for every first responder gift box they sell. Stews will donate $25 to the American Red Cross. All right, guys, World of Golf, we're returning soon. And Adam Scott, and you can put this in proper perspective. Adam Scott, not one of the stars in golfing, right? But
no, he's
a very well-known, legitimate player, yes?
No, time out. He's a Masters champion. I mean, he's one of the stars. I mean, you look at all-time money leaders He's sixth on that list. He's made over $55 million.
Wow. All right, yeah. I didn't realize. So would you consider him to be one of the stars?
Yeah, he's one of the stars of professional golf. Yeah. I mean, he's not Tiger or Phil.
I get it, but he's a big time player.
He's a top 10 player, correct, Rico?
He's a big time player.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. I would consider him one of the big names in golf. Yes.
So he was talking, said he's surprised the PGA hasn't taken more precautions in terms of protecting some of their golfers, and he said he's not so quick to come back. And he's not going to come back right now, which for a guy that we talk about as a top 10 golfer is fairly sizable news when we're closely approaching the return of golf.
Yeah, but it's because he can afford to not come back.
Right.
I mean, that's part of it. I mean, your level of risk or how much, you know, risk you're willing to take on is going to be dependent on your situation and the sense of urgency you have to get back to making money or being able to stay on the actual tour. You know what I mean? That's not a concern of his. I mean, of all the sports returning back to action, I mean, the one where, yeah, there's risk, but I mean, not nearly as much risk as the other ones is golf.
Yeah, just because concerned of the nature of the game, you know, being spaced out, and you know, you can still have the opportunity to compete without putting yourself at, you know, an unusually high risk. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like it just,
especially
it just,
how it's going to be.
It just feels like you have a better just based on the actual game, you have an opportunity to go out there and still have the social distancing measures and take the proper precautions to try to keep yourself as safe as possible. Now, Adam Scott, when he outlined his concerns, he said that, you know, having the rapid results from the testing would be one of the things that he would want to see, but also knowing how widespread the testing was, because I think he said that the players and the caddies will be tested, but he wanted to make sure that everybody that's involved putting these events together, making sure that they're also tested so he doesn't have to, you know, sit out for weeks on end because he has a positive test, because he got it from somebody that was asymptomatic. So I get what he's talking about. I think his concerns are valid. But, I mean, with the sport of golf, you see golfers sitting out events when we don't have a health crisis that's going on. It's not like every single golfer plays in every single event. I think the question becomes is what do you do with one of these other sports when you have somebody that is of the magnitude of Adam Scott with golf, if you have somebody like that in baseball or somebody like that in basketball, somebody like that in football that decides that they're not going to come back, what do you do as a sport?
Well, what can you do?
I don't really think that there's much you can do,
right?
Because everybody understands that there would be some people that are hesitant. And if you have an underlying health condition, you're at risk, and you're taking your life into your own hands. So I think there are people that would understand if those athletes don't come back. But from a PR standpoint, from an optics standpoint, how do you spin that if you're one of those other leagues?
I don't know if you can spin it.
Yeah,
in
I think
a positive
you have to have
way.
Transparency, I mean, right?
Yeah, transparency. And all you can do is, you know, make sure your event goes off. I mean, if you're golf, and we're gonna have the event on June 11th, you just make sure that your event goes off without a hitch, and you have, you know, all the appropriate tests. Everyone gets tested. Everyone involved at being at the course and putting this thing on gets tested, and you don't have any setbacks. So it gives a guy like Adam Scott, who, you know, currently is the sixth ranked golfer in the world, you know, the confidence that when he does come back or he makes the decision to come back, that he'll be, you know, he'll be as safe as he possibly can be under the circumstances.
I can't imagine there's ever been a time where sports are watching other sports more closely than they are now. Like, you have to look out at these other sports and just, you know, take note and pray to God that they're going to do the right thing and that it's going to succeed, because it's going to have direct impact on your sport moving forward.
You're right, Dave. I mean, these other leagues are paying attention to what's going on with other sports, and they're trying to see what those other entities are doing in order to keep their athletes safe. And, you know, listen, this is a situation where you don't have perfect answers, but you just try to do the best you can. And we've seen, based on what has happened with the UFC the last couple of weeks, that if you take that risk and you try to put the proper precautions and procedures in place with the consultation of these public health officials, that it could end up being a huge win for your sport. You know, you have a huge, I hate to frame it this way, but you have an opportunity to have a lot more eyeballs on your sport than you otherwise would, because everybody else is around the country is sheltering in place and quarantining. So it presents a natural opportunity, but you have to find a way to be able to bring these athletes back safely and get them to agree to, you know, a path forward that represents the best interests of everybody involved.
Yeah, and I think that goes without saying that if one sport has negative feedback or bad testing or guys are becoming infected, it would be, any sport, be it golf, be it hockey, be it NBA, whatever it happens to be, that's bad news. Because like you said, like Lincoln Riley said, we got one chance at this to bring it back. And if you bring one of these sports back and all of a sudden you have an outbreak of COVID and it's you know, bursting through a locker room or the field, or guys are getting infected. Honestly, I don't know what happens. I mean, you probably have to shut down for quite a while.
Well, here's the thing, Dave. You don't. I mean, if you've got to have the testing in place, right? That has to be a part of bringing any sport back. You have to have testing that way you can identify who's dealing with it and isolate them, so they don't transmit the virus to everybody else. So that's. I think everybody understands that part of it. But when we start talking about bringing sports back, I think a big part of the conversation has to be the cooperation of the athletes, man, because it's inevitable that one of these players is going to test positive, and you don't need that positive test shifting the attitudes of the athletes that are playing the sport. I think you have to be realistic with what's going to happen as we start to ramp things back up. You're going to increase the risk that you're asking the athletes to take, and that's not something that's unique to professional sports. That's around the country. But I think the importance of the cooperation of the athlete is going to be huge in terms of making sure that you can still have an entertainment product that everybody can feel good about. And you have athletes that are competing against each other, and they're confident in the measures that are in place. Confidence has got to be a huge part of this, Dave.
It has to be, and I guess there's going to be some athletes. Now, I wonder how it would look. Let's just say that Adam Scott, right, 6 weeks down the road, says, all right, I'm ready to come back. He can do that. That's fine. It's an individual sport. What happens if it's Major League Baseball and Mike Trout says, I'm completely uncomfortable. I don't want to play. I have enough money. It's not an issue for me. They start playing. It's going well without a hitch. I mean, 6 weeks down the road, does he just Mike Trout is probably a bad example because they're going to welcome him back. But yeah. If it's a lesser player, is he just welcomed back into the clubhouse, or is there an issue there?
Well, I think guys would understand, Dave, because this is something different. Like, guys understand that this is an individual decision, and, you know, the COVID-19 virus is taking people's lives. And I think as of yesterday, you're talking about 93,000 Americans dying from coronavirus. So I think people realize that this is something that's unprecedented. This is something that's different. I don't think guys in the locker room are going to hold it against their teammates if they decide that it's best for them not to show up. It's best for their families if they don't compete and play in games. But I guess the one thing that I would say is if you had a positive test and then as a result of that, the players around the sport don't have confidence in the measures that the sport has put in place to protect them, then you got a problem. And so for me, I guess it comes down to making sure that when you're going back and forth in these talks between the owners and the players, that everybody understand that even if we do have a couple of positive tests, we're going to do everything that we can to protect them. And the players have to have confidence in that, because if they don't, then you're talking about the potential for the sport to start and stop again. And nobody wants that to happen.
Yeah, I think, Dave, to answer your question, as far as welcoming the player back if he chooses 6 weeks down the road to rejoin the team, I mean, if you're a team and you're paying the player, I mean, of course you're going to welcome him back, no?
If you're paying him while he's gone,
you're not going to say no when he wants to come back.
No, I get that, but I'm just wondering, like, the dynamic in the clubhouse. Like, golf is such an individualized sport that he can say, I'm not going to play, and there's no ramifications for anyone else. Like, there's I mean, you're part of a team in these other sports.
Hey, you're part of a team, but you're not going to sit there. I mean, with you know what we're dealing with, and no one's ever dealt with something like this before. And you know, it could be because Mike Trout's wife is pregnant. and you know he wants to wait until his child is born, and then he'll return to the team, whatever it is. I mean, you can't sit there in judgment of your teammate for making that decision.
I think
you don't know
fair.
What's going on with him.
As long as it's not a financial decision, right? As long as you're not saying, well, I'm not playing for less this or less that. I think that's when it becomes a really bad look.
But don't the finances have to be a part of it too, though, Dave? Like, I mean, you have
yes,
to weigh
but
the
I think
risk versus the
quiet.
Reward, right?
But I think they have to be kept quiet. I don't think it's...
No, Dave, I'm with you. Well, we're talking about what happens in the locker room, right? We're not talking about in the court of public opinion. I'm just
right.
saying in the locker
in
room.
In the locker
I think,
room, I think you can have those conversations, yes.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, I'm with Rick on this one. I think players understand when you're choosing to make a decision that's in the interest of your family over what's in the best interest of the team. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. And how about, so we go from Adam Scott, who's not comfortable golfing, and now Ohio State is eyeing 20 to 50,000 fans for home games this fall. I mean, we talked about this earlier. It feels like we're on such polar opposite viewpoints from different people in different areas of the country.
Yeah, it
but
does,
I think that's
Dave.
What rubs.
Go ahead.
But isn't that what rubs you the wrong way, Chris? I mean, you have Adam Scott, who's, you know, sixth ranked golfer in the entire world. You have the head of, you know, you got J.C. Treader, the head of the NFL Players Association, you know, voicing his concerns and all the different obstacles to try to get, you know, players to feel comfortable coming back. And you've heard from them. You've heard from, you know, all the different unions, sort of from Snell talking about the Rona and Bryce Harper. You haven't really heard. Well, not you really haven't. You haven't heard from the college athlete. And it doesn't sound like you're going to. These are going to be decisions independently made by each individual school. And then, you know, these kids are going to have to make a decision, which is not fair.
So if for instance, a kid decides, you know what, the Adam Scott of college football, I'm not comfortable. Is that it? Does he lose his scholarship? Is he off the team? I mean, how does that work?
Well, I don't think they're going to do that. Paul Feinbaum talked about it this morning on Get Up. He said that these universities, even though the scholarship is renewable from year to year, they wouldn't pull a kid's scholarship because they chose not to participate and not to come back and play in the college football season because they felt like they would be compromised and potentially infected with the COVID-19 virus. He said that they wouldn't do that just based on the optics of it. But I mean, guys, I don't know. I don't know how much more obvious it could be the motivation that these colleges and universities have to get these kids back on campus next month or, you know, in the summer months. Like, to me, this is all about money. It's not about doing what's in the best interest of the kid. And that's what bothers me so much about it. Like, I don't get it. I mean, Charles Barkley was on with Anderson Cooper last night on CNN, and he said he doesn't think it's safe. And he doesn't like the fact that they're pushing for these kids to come back and play in a season this fall. He said it. College football, college basketball, he doesn't feel like it's right to force these kids to try to come back and play. And that's essentially what they would be doing. They could say it's voluntary, but when you think about collegiate athletes, I mean, those coaches, they expect those kids to be there. And if the kid's not there, they can say they're not going to hold it against them, but I mean, whenever that kid decided he was going to come back,
right.
the coaches would hold it against him.
Unless you're a star player, right? Unless you're a great player, I mean, it's hard to imagine you're going to be welcomed back with open arms the same way if you just come back right now when they want you to.
Yeah, it's not the same dynamic as with professional sports, and that's the part that's tough because you don't have a union for these college athletes. You don't have anybody that's there to check these colleges and universities and look out for the health and well-being of these players first and foremost. Like that's not the NCAA's priority in all this. That's not these Power Five conferences' priority in all of this. And so for me, it's a question of who's looking out for the best interest of the kid. It doesn't feel like it's college football.
Their parents. That's about it. Cause I mean, you start to break it down and you think about it. I mean, you're talking about, I mean, the amount of money, we all get it. I mean, NBA, I mean, players have already lost, I think, what is it, close to, what, 25% of their money if this thing doesn't come back, right? I think it's 25% for the NBA.
Yep.
You know, NHL will have long-term financial ramifications with escrow and everything else with the money that they lose. And you have, again, it's not apples to apples, but it's still billions of dollars in all these leagues and in college football. Adam Silver doesn't think it's safe yet, right? No. The NFL is just barely opening up their facilities, and it's only to, you know, staff.
It's not open to players.
Players that are rehabbing, that's it. Not open to players. I mean, the NHL doesn't feel safe about it yet, and yet we're sitting here talking about Ohio State having players back on campus for workouts on June 8th. Does that seem right?
No.
No, it doesn't seem right.
Until you see the numbers that only 41% of Power 5 schools actually have the funds to withstand this kind of situation.
Right. So you're talking about losing programs, losing teams.
You're talking about almost 60% of the Power 5 schools that don't have enough financial, that aren't in a good enough spot financially to deal with something like this. It's a lot of schools, man. That's a huge number.
I mean, it's the majority of the schools.
Yeah.
About how many athletes we're talking about, though, Dave. We're talking about a lot of football players. You're talking about programs that have over 100 players. And how many Division I schools are there? What, 130?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a lot of players, Dave. I mean, that's a lot of risk that college football would be subjecting these kids to.
Just to put on a game, right? So you have how many kids on the sideline, Chris?
I mean, all the kids on the team are on the sideline now. Okay. Not all of them are dressed in uniform, but all of them are on the sideline.
So you have 100?
Yeah.
How many coaches do you have for a college football team? All right, so 110. How many coaches do you have for a college football team?
You're going to have a dozen coaches.
How many equipment managers and assistant four and
or
helpers?
Five, 4 or 5, Dave. And then athletic training staff, you've got 4 or 5. So, I mean, it's a lot of people that are on the sideline.
So is it fair to say you're upwards of 150-plus people on the sideline of a college football game?
Yeah, I mean, it might be, you know, yeah, you're talking about 130, 140 people, yeah.
That's a lot of people in close quarters.
Yeah, and you're going to have to rely on all of those individuals to do the right things and to make sure that they're taking every precaution to keep themselves safe.
And there's just no way.
It's not.
I mean, I'm sorry. There's just no way. You can't believe that 19-year-old, 20-year-old kids are going to continuously, all of them, universally do the right thing. There's just no way.
And what's scary, Dave, is if somebody doesn't do the right thing, it could potentially cost someone their lives. And for what?
There's a lot of money at stake.
Yeah, it's a lot of money at stake, but, I mean, you can't. There's no money in it for the kids.
It just feels morally corrupt, doesn't it?
It does.
No, because, I mean, the reality, I mean, you start talking about numbers and everything else. I mean, hundreds of players and everything else. I mean, the rosters of college football teams. And then you have the polar opposite, where Adam Silver's been the most progressive. He's concerned about having an NBA roster together, which is, what, 15 players?
Right.
Yep.
Like, he doesn't feel like he can keep, at this point, keep 15 players, safe enough to make it make sense. But we can keep 100 kids safe enough? Come on, man. Stop.
And then Ohio's talking about having fans at the games. 20 to 50,000 fans at the games. Because 100,000,
Dave, did we really need that from Gene Smith? Did we need that from Gene Smith?
And now?
That's what I'm saying. You want to talk about that now? Like, why are you talking about how many fans we're going to have in the building this fall? Like, that to me doesn't. But that just shows you where they're at in terms of their overall motivation, Dave. That just shows you this is about money. But this is not about doing right by the kids.
But they're so transparent with it.
That's the thing, Dave. And they can try to hide it behind whatever language that they want. But the reality is that this is something that they don't have to do right now. Like, take some more time. Why would you risk kids' lives in order to protect the bottom line and to make sure that these institutions of higher learning maintain viability financially? Like, that to me shouldn't be worth risking a kid's life. It shouldn't be. But that's exactly what they're doing. And they're dead wrong for it.
Yeah, it's a bad look. It's a really bad look. And God forbid this spreads, because if you have fans in the seats at Ohio, what is it, Ohio Stadium? Is it Ohio Stadium?
Yeah.
50,000, 20,000, 30,000, it's just, and it starts to spread? I mean, I don't know. And there's everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Here's what you can do. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, your nose, your mouth. Stay home when you're sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and 98.7 ESPN New York. All right, so Bill Barnwell joining us right at the top of the 12 o'clock hour. What does this do to Cuddle Mary Trash now? Does this push
up to
it
you.
Back?
Up
I'd
to
like
you.
To do it. I enjoy it.
We can push it back, and add that to we can do a you know a double segment where we
we'll see. I mean, if Bill goes till 12:17, we can do it in that segment. If Bill goes till 12:23, we'll take a break and come back and then do CMT.
Well, Dave, I think we should just plan on Bill taking up the entire first segment of the 12 o'clock hour.
You got a lot of questions?
Yeah, because Rick is going to ask him his final question about two or three times. It's one of his favorite writers for ESPN.
He's very good.
I have some hair care questions too, as well. I want to throw in there.
Come on, man! Why stop? Stop, Rico!
I don't think you'll do it. Ask him. Ask him about what product he uses.
I would imagine it's probably just soap and water at this point, isn't it?
Soap in his hair?
What scalp? You mean, Dave? Just by the way, you calling it CMT? Love it. By the way, and just going straight initials. Fantastic.
Yeah, that's right.
That's
well, because I don't think it's going to change. Because I'm told, well, it could be a change to this, change to this. I don't believe it. So I'm going to embrace it and cuddle it until it changes. So it's CMT for me.
Okay, we'll stick with CMT. I mean, all the ideas I come up with are pretty have a lot of innuendo, which apparently is not frowned upon.
Innuendo bad.
Innuendo, yeah, really bad.
So is this what we're going to do? Every time I stumble on myself.
No,
take the stick in the face,
of course not.
And you get back to your business.
Exactly. You shut your mouth, and you get back to work.
I mean, you butchered ramifications before. I didn't say anything. I let it go.
What did I say? How bad was it?
It was terrible.
Okay, that's fine. Listen, I appreciate that. I would have rather you pointed it out.
No, why would I do that?
What did I say? Pretend to be me for a second.
That was Dave Rick. That was Dave being the Michael Jordan of sports radio.
No, he just went after me.
Barely went after you.
Pointing out your flaws.
Innuendo. We heard that. Yeah. I stumbled. I'm sorry.
How did I say ramifications? Tell me.
It was not good. I don't think
Make
there was
me a, laugh.
I don't.
Laugh.
It was Santiago. Do you have it by chance? Did you hear when he said that before?
I do not.
The only one I remember Rico messing up is unbeknownst.
Well, that he just doesn't know how to say it properly. I don't think that's like a mess up. He just doesn't know.
I say benounced.
Unbeknownst to you.
I like pronounce. Sounds better.
You might like it, but that's not the word.
That's fine.
So is this where we are though as a show? If one of us makes a mistake or a misstep, we just point it out immediately? Is that what we're going to do?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
No,
okay.
I don't like it. I don't like it. Seems too adversarial. I don't like it at
that's
all.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, we speaking
but
of
But Dave, I think the only reason that Rick does it is because you do it.
I didn't do it. He butchered ramifications. Butchered
it.
But you
pointed out. So,
yeah,
but
it was so
I did
bad,
not
you don't
point
remember
it out.
It couldn't have been that bad. You don't even remember how I said it.
Oh, it was like ramifications. I was like, what? Because you were speaking quickly and you rifled through it. And I said nothing. And
listen,
I could have jumped down your throat with that one.
If we understood what he was trying to say, can't we just look past it?
Chris, do you understand what's happening? I did look past it. Then he comes up, I say innuendo incorrectly, and he jumps all over it.
So, Dave, what you're trying to say is you've never corrected Rick or I on air when we mispronounce a word.
Oh, I didn't say that.
Oh, okay, but I think that's my point.
In this instance, I did not.
No, in that instance, yes. But, I mean, you've done it several other times, and so I think in reaction to that, Rick likes to point out when you make a mistake. All I'm saying is if you stopped it, then I think he would stop it.
All I'm saying is if it's open season, it's open season.
I don't want it to be open season. I want everybody to stand down.
I won't do it to you.
I don't want no trouble.
Rick, is this what you're saying, though? It's open?
It's open for me and you. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Open.
All right.
Yeah, back and forth. Real locker room vibe.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll sit back with my popcorn and watch this one. Now, can I laugh?
Yeah.
Can I laugh for free?
Of course.
Please.
Okay, so if I'm laughing, you're not going to take a shot at me just because I'm amused.
Welcome.
By it.
If you start to pile on, now you become open season. Is that fair?
What we have to define what pile on means, Dave. I mean, it seems like that's open to interpretation. Like it sounds like college is saying that they're going to be open this fall. What does pile on mean?
I don't know. but okay. I'll know when I hear it.
It sounds like dangerous territory.
It could potentially be. All right, the ramification of Ohio State, their athletic director, Gene Smith, yesterday saying, and this is unbelievable to me, Ohio State University Stadium could be a very fan-safe environment.
So obviously we're fortunate with 100,000 seats in the stadium. Could we implement the current CDC guidelines, the state guidelines around physical distancing, mask requirements, and all those type of things in an outdoor environment and have obviously significantly less fans than what we are used to? I think it's possible. So I just feel like we have the talent and skill and the space capacity to provide an opportunity for a certain number of fans to have access to our particular stadium.
Could you imagine that? 50,000 people at Ohio Stadium in September? It just doesn't seem smart.
Well, could we? Yeah, we could. But the real question is, should you? That should be the real question. You could.
But isn't the answer obvious?
The answer is obviously no.
You should not.
You should not. No. You should not. I realize that the college football season is 100 days from now, but still, and a lot can happen in that time. But based on the way that things are going now, like, I just don't think we're going to be there when you're going to be able to have that many people gather in one place. And it's an entertainment thing, Dave, so I don't view it as something that's essential.
Yeah, but it's not even that, though, Chris. I mean, you could do it, and I guess you could try. I mean, in theory, you could try to make it as safe as possible. But, I mean, going back to should you do it, I mean, you're going to give – it's almost like protect the people from themselves. By giving them this opportunity and open this up to 50,000 people and trying to have the social distancing and the masks and everything else – I mean, but now all of a sudden, I mean, you're putting these people in a position where they're going to make the decision to go because that's bound to happen.
It's in their DNA
to go. And then you're going to put them in a spot where now it's in their own hands. Please come to the game and be responsible. Oh, okay. Because we always see that at sporting events is everyone
right with 50,000 people. So no. Ohio State scores the winning touchdown against God knows who and you don't high five the guy next to you. You don't embrace
you
that
do.
Guy? It's ridiculous.
Of course you do. It is ridiculous. And what makes it even more ridiculous is the more you read, the more there is, I mean, the more questions that you come up with because there's so much uncertainty. Now you got the CDC saying that COVID-19 does not spread easily through touching surfaces or objects, which is different now because before we were told it can, and you got to wipe down your groceries and everything else. You got to leave packages on the front, on your front stoop for a couple days. So, I mean, there's just, it keeps changing, man. I mean, this thing is, one day you think one thing, and then the next day you hear something else.
But, Rick, that's the problem, though. We don't have enough information about the virus. So how can you come to any determination about what should or shouldn't happen once we get to late August, early September? You can't. You can't do that and be speaking from an informed position. So that's why I think it's a little premature by these colleges and universities to be discussing, oh, okay, we're going to have, a season, and then we're ballparking how many fans we're going to have in the actual venues. To me, that just doesn't make any sense. That doesn't have a place in the conversation when we're talking about college football in late May, based on where we're at with this health crisis. It shouldn't be something that's factoring into the discussion at all. The only thing that we should be talking about is it plausible to be able to keep these athletes safe? And when can we expect that we would be able to have a season? Fans is so far down the line in terms of, the priorities when you're talking about college athletics right now.
Should be. Doesn't sound like it is, though, right? Let's go to Ira in Staten Island. Ira, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, what's happening, Dave? What's happening, boys? Listen, it's great to think positive and put out a positive vibe, but you got to be realistic here, too. I mean, 50,000 people in the stadium right now is not happening, and that's the furthest thing that should be on everybody's mind. But I get it. You want to get things back. But, I'm involved with swimming, okay? And you got about 20 kids on the team. Once pools open, whenever that might be, okay, already the Swimming Association, from what I understand, they're talking about one kid in the lane and no more than six kids in the pool at a time. You got 20 kids on the team. How in the world is the NCAA going to take kids and put them in groups of 75 to 100 and have practices and dine together, stand on the sidelines together. So, you know, the notion of having 50,000 people in the stadium, I think that's ridiculous. And, you know, once again, it's all about the money. They don't care about these kids. And look at the NFL. I mean, don't you think if they felt it was safe, they would start having mini camps or OTAs in June? So how in the world does the NCAA expect 18 to 20-year-old kids come back in the beginning of June and start having some type of spring ball? I mean, I think it's absurd.
Well, I think the only reason that they would do it is if they felt like they could get away with it. And I think that the reason they feel that way is because they recognize that they're the ones that are going to have final say in this. There's not going to be any pushback from the student-athletes. You might have some players that decide they're not going to show up, but the overwhelming majority of the kids, once they open those facilities, whether it's, you know, called voluntary or it's something that the coaches think is mandatory, those kids will be there. They'll feel the pressure to be back on campus and working with the coaches and the staffs of those teams. And I don't think that that's a fair position to put those kids in.
And I guess the question is, of course we want nothing to happen, but is it realistic to think that putting 20, 30, 50,000 people, 50,000 is a lot of people together in one area that nothing's going to happen from it?
Yeah, but you can't even guarantee you're keeping your student-athletes safe. You want to start rolling out plans to have up to 50,000 people in your stadium?
Did you see the piece on Real Sports where they said the reason it was so rampant through Italy is because people went to a soccer game and were,
yep.
Now granted, different all over each other, which obviously it wouldn't be anymore. But still, I mean, it was spread rampantly because people went to a sporting event and were in close contact. So when you leave the stadium, is it one row at a time for 10 minutes? It's going to take you 4 hours to leave? I don't know. It just doesn't feel realistic to do it like that right now.
No, it doesn't. But they, I mean, financially for them, I mean, there's a sense of urgency. I mean, that's the only way to try to make sense of it, because it doesn't make sense. I mean, you would want to give yourself as much time as possible. So it's the reason why the NHL and NBA are talking about starting their seasons up in December, the upcoming seasons.
Right.
Once they finish these ones, because they want as much time as possible to have more answers. You know, maybe, you know, you get lucky and one of these vaccines ends up being successful, and that happens a lot sooner than everyone thought. And you can go back to, well, I don't know what the new normal is going to be, but you know people are going to still go to these games if they feel safe doing it, or safer doing it than they do now.
Which makes sense, but right now feels premature. And to even discuss it now.
Well, you're right, David. To even have that a part of the conversation is wrong. But, I mean, just, you know, spinning it forward to this coming fall. I mean, just talking about having fans, Dave, and you know, entertaining the idea of 20, 30, 40, 50,000 people being there. I mean, if you open up the stadiums and you say, yeah, we're going to have fans there, the presumption that those fans are going to have is that it's safe, and that's not going to be the reality of where we're at with the health crisis. So, again, it feels like you're perpetuating a problem that this country is dealing with, all in the interest of your bottom line. And I'm sorry, that's not a good enough motivation for them to move forward. Not for me.
It's weird, I'll tell you that. All right, you got a bucket list? Okay, now imagine if you won the $298 million Mega Millions jackpot. Taking a mega chance could mean making your wildest dreams a reality. After all, anything can happen in Jersey. We'll get to more of your calls, 800-919-3776. June 1 sounds like we'll find out about the NBA. NHL sounds like they're discussing 24-team postseason. College football is ready to get right back at it. Bill Barnwell, of course, at noon. A lot to do. DiPietro Canty, Rothenberg with you, 98.7 ESPN.
You know, NHL will have long-term financial ramifications with
some fine work from the guys behind the glass. Ray Deanhan, Ray Santiago. They isolated when you attempted to say ramifications.
Financial ramifications with S.
Can we hear it again?
Financial ramifications with S.
What did you say?
It was kind of like ramifications.
One more time, Santi.
Financial ramifications.
No, it's mammarications.
Mammarications. Yeah.
Mammarications.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is. I'm not sure what that word was. I was trying to put two words there. I think it was supposed to be ramifications.
Of course it was. And it was fine. And it would have gone unnoticed.
But the fact that you noticed it, I mean, but now this
I notice everything.
Sneaky now. Yeah, but that,
I don't
this
think
makes them a little concerned now. It is a little bit sneaky.
No, I notice everything.
Well, if you noticed it, I would appreciate you just tell me, just because now all of a sudden you could be, I mean, going back and forth with Sherry, like, oh, did you hear what Rick just said? Financial memorications.
Memorications. Dare he say something like that? Let's go to Jim in Basking Ridge. Jim, you're on 98.7.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Great show.
Thanks.
Now, given that you say there's not enough information for the virus, now, given the fact that the mortality rate for kids that are 20 years old that get it is closer to 0% than 0.01%, I want to know if Chris Canty was a senior right now going into a senior year. If his college said we're going to start OTAs right now in 2 weeks, is he going back?
You know what? I would probably end up going back because I would feel pressure to go back. And that's the part of it that's sad. I mean, if the rest of my teammates were going to be on campus and they were going to decide that they were going to participate in workouts, yeah, I would feel pressure going into my last college football season to go back. But I just don't think that's a position that the kids should be put in. I don't believe that teenagers or young 20-somethings can understand the gravity and all the risks that are involved in going back to these campuses. Listen, if the colleges don't feel like it's safe to have regular students on campus, then why should we feel good about them having the student athletes there?
I mean, you're looking at kids that have a 0% chance, basically, to get this, to die from this virus. That's the risk. Yeah,
but how do you know that? How do you know that? You don't know that.
Look at the numbers.
0%. So there's 0% chance that you die.
You have a much better chance of getting hazed and drinking in college than you do of dying on this. So, yeah, you do. You have
why are we sheltering in place? Why are we quarantining? Why are we doing all of those things if you don't feel like there's any real risk associated with it?
Well, the risk, you know, people with underlying conditions are always at risk.
Well, okay, and some of these athletes might have underlying conditions that they don't know about. That happens. We talk about that at the professional ranks. The head of the NFLPA, J.C. Treader, said that yesterday. So if you've got that at the NFL level, why would you think that you wouldn't have that at the collegiate level when you're talking about a lot more players?
Look at the numbers. Look at the kids from 21 and under that die from this. It's infinitesimal. It's so small. You have like literally 10,000 other things that you can die from with a greater risk.
Well, Jim, it might not be about death, but it might be about compromising your long-term health. And we're finding out more information about the virus every single day. I mean, last week they were talking about the effects that they're identifying in small children. And they didn't think that it would affect small children to that degree. So, I mean, I just don't think that that's, you know, to sit here and say that we know definitively that there's no risk associated with these players coming back. I don't feel like that's right.
Well, it feels like it's kind of ignorant, is what it feels like.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.